This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we'll visit with Beth Courtney of Louisiana Public Broadcasting. Tonight's the night for Frontline, and its feature on St. George and the folks trying to collect enough signatures to force an election. Say they're within 1,000 signatures of getting this on the ballot. We'll talk about it with Beth Courtney. Also, Elliot Stonecipher, the well-versed and longstanding pollster from Shreveport, on election 2014, now 16 weeks away, with Mary Landrieu, Bill Cassidy, and Rob Manus out on the campaign trail. We'll also talk with Elliot about the travails of Governor Bobby Jindal. And we're slated to hear from Jenny Ballard, the new artistic director of Theater Baton Rouge. Now the news on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your local dial. Outside the area, please call 877-217-5757. Inkster Show at WRKF.org online. Frank Barnett producing, and our leadoff guest is Beth Courtney, the president of Louisiana Public Broadcasting, a post she's held now for 30 years. She was the first anchor on the state we're in back in 1976, and a few years that program will observe its 40th anniversary. Good morning, Beth Courtney.
Well, good morning, Jim. It's a pleasure to be with you.
It's always good to talk with you. And you're the one who came up with the state we're in.
I know. I said I thought that was sort of catchy for maybe about a year. And so now we've had it for many years and wonderful anchors and news people throughout it. And I think Shauna Spanford and Charlie Winham are just great who are involved in it now.
They are, and it's always a pleasure to be on that show. And I remember the last time I was on with John McGinnis. So,
I know. Gosh.
What a contributor he was to public life in Louisiana.
He was, and we have a wonderful archive of material of people such as John. Mm-hmm. It was good to tribute to him.
40 years of great material on Louisiana Public Broadcasting, and tonight is a big night for this community because Frontline will show the growing racial divide in American schools and the legacy of Brown versus Board of Education. And one of the side stories to this is what's going on with St. George. You've seen the work. Are you impressed with what we'll see on Frontline tonight?
Well, I think they did a good job. I think, though, it is a very complex topic, and they've only scratched the surface. As the executive producer, David Fanning, said to me, this is a segment. It doesn't capture the full complexities of the show. So, therefore, we are following it with the discussion of many of the people who were involved in the issue in the studios of LPB. So I hope everyone stays tuned after Frontline at 10 o'clock for LPB special Frontline Breaking Away. And the other thing is on our website starting today, we're going to have up a variety of programs that we've had through the years, including John Pamp's documentary on the topic. We did one also called With All Deliberate Speed. We have a wealth of material, and I hope that the listeners will take a look at that as well as the documentary and the follow-up conversation.
297-5633, your number. Beth Courtney is the guest, the president of Louisiana Public Broadcasting. Tonight at 9 on LPB is the Frontline feature, and then that is followed, as Beth stated, by a 10 o'clock presentation with discussion from local leaders regarding the St. George dilemma. Who will be on the panel?
In the discussion, and first let me just say, one of the interesting things was several of the participants said this is the first time they've all been together to talk about the topic. So and that just made me feel like that's exactly what we should be doing.
Certainly.
So we have, the first time. I think Chandler Lou probably said that, and Dustin Yates thanked us for bringing everyone together. So Lionel Rainey is there, Norman Browning, Dustin Yates, Melinda Davis, who's with One Community, One School District, Bodie White, Senator White, Representative Pat Smith, Tara Wicker of the Metro Council, Chandler Loop of the Metro Council, Barbara Freiberg of the East Baton Rouge Parish School Board, Des Moines Rutledge, also the General Counsel of the school system, Dr. Lorenz, who did a study with Jim Richardson about the impact, and then we also have John Camp, who produced a documentary on this as well. The interesting thing for me is, as I was chatting with the folks in Boston, they remember when John Camp produced for Frontline, a documentary on Jimmy Swaggart. So we have a long history mm-hmm. of being involved in serious journalism.
Yep, John Camp is the best. And, of course, he was on the trail of Brother Swaggart for various media entities for many years, much to the chagrin of Jimmy Swaggart. Who even at one point praised him from the pulpit, and when that didn't stop the intrepid reporting from Mr. Camp, then he started blasting him from the pulpit, that didn't stop him either.
Well, you know, I was very impressed, I have to tell you, Jim, with the level of conversation in our studios last night, and I hope the viewers will feel that too. I think there are a lot of very well-intended people who care about the future of their children and education in Baton Rouge.
They are, and this story is front page news in The Advocate today. The organizers say they have over 17,000 signatures, and they need 18,000 legitimate, validated signatures to put this proposal on the ballot. And I must say, for those who have discounted this effort, it looks like the organizers are having some traction on this. They may end up getting what they want as far as a vote of the people in the city of St. George.
Well, the show and the focus is obviously on the school system. There are other complexities of this issue as well. And we didn't get the opportunity to talk about it, but we talked about it on other public squares, and that is, this whole idea now in Louisiana of we have, you know, vouchers or scholarships for students, other options. We have charter schools. We have the whole new schools Baton Rouge going on. It's a very complicated topic in terms of the community here that I think perhaps the people in Boston weren't as aware of.
Well, tonight it's Frontline more than 50 years after six black children integrated an all-white elementary school in this area. Racial balance in the state's public school system remains an elusive goal. Critics of efforts to create the breakaway school district in Baton Rouge say the move will only exacerbate a growing racial divide, and proponents of the St. George City Incorporation say the measure is needed to provide quality public education. And so there will be a robust discussion with people on various sides of the issue. And this one is like many issues. There aren't two sides. There may be 40 or 50 sides on this one. And Beth, it appears that all these years later, despite the efforts to make our community a more harmonious place and more integrated, there remains a lot of work to be done.
Well, Jim, I would also say to your listeners that I hope that they would have the time to go to watch on our website something we do called Newsmakers. I taped Saturday a conversation with five former Outstanding Teachers of the Year, Louisiana Teachers of the Year, and Phyllis Crawford was one of those, and she was just terrific. We have that whole conversation of the best teachers in the state basically talking about what we need to do in education. And I found their comments refreshing. I found the fact that what they're focused on is important. So I hope that...
Well, this is an important and major discussion. And we look forward to it tonight at 9 on LPB on Frontline, and then a discussion at 10. And there are other side stories that are relevant on the LPB website. Beth, we thank you, and I know you're at the airport. Hopefully you're not getting out of town because of the reaction.
No, I'm not. I'm going to a conference, but I look forward to a robust conversation on the web. I look forward to everyone's comments, and thank you for the opportunity, Jim. I appreciate your role in discussions in this community as well. Thank you so much.
And let's talk soon. Beth Courtney.
All right.
Take
Bye-bye.
Care. Bye-bye. 297-5633, your number, and we're joined now by the well-known pollster, Elliot Stone Cipher, joining us from his base in Shreveport, and we're 16 weeks away from the November 4th election, as in 16 weeks from today. Good morning, Elliot.
Good morning, Jim. Good to be here.
How's it looking in the marquee race, the U.S. Senate showdown?
Jim, I'm paying attention, close attention, of course, to all the polling that is being done and is coming out where the public can really, if they choose to, drill down in the data. I think it's a dead heat at this point, and I think the better way to put that probably is that all of the polling, once you apply the margin of error in that given poll, show that there has never been in this recent period of months anybody with more than about a 3 or 4 or 5% lead. So I think it stays that way, by the way, until after Labor Day, more or less.
Well, Senator Landrieu has certainly had the capacity and has utilized it to advertise on television and radio. And has that helped her?
You know, I don't think so. I don't think any of this early media, and of course, there are a lot of new rules about when you start and so forth. The traditions of starting much later than this has been in this race are pretty much gone by the wayside. I don't see that any of those media flights, as we call them, have really made some pronounced difference in the polling, much less has a pronounced difference, if there was one by some definition, carried through to the next poll. So I don't think they're moving the meter at this point.
Were you surprised at all that Paul Hollis got out of the race yesterday?
No, not really. And I don't pretend to know anything about the Hollis campaign or Paul Hollis himself. It just, after all the years of doing this and seeing this, it always felt like there was another reason for him to be, quote-unquote, in the race, that there was something else that he wanted, maybe from the Republican leadership. And in any case, qualifying's not until August, third week of August. So, you know, he was not officially in the race, but it seems much, much more logical now that he has made it official that he's not.
It certainly looks like Rob Manus will go to the post, and he is campaigning vigorously. How much of a factor will he be?
We don't know. We do know, of course, that he has far less money. He's raised about $1 million to, of course, 5 or 6 or 8 million for the other two candidates so far. He doesn't probably expect nearly as much help from third-party supporters as the Democrat or Republican lead Republican candidate will get. I think the issue really here is that the rank-and-file Republican Party voter is conservative enough in Louisiana that it almost doesn't leave room for an expansive Tea Party vote. That's where I think we are on this, and yet Manus, of course, his campaign is all about testing that.
Well, Manus, it would seem, would get enough votes that a runoff would be a likely probability, but if he gets, let's say, 5%, then a runoff might not be an assurance. The fewer candidates, obviously, the more the prospect that one of the others, Landrieu or Cassidy, could win in the primary. What's your take on the prospect of a December runoff?
You know, Jim, I think of it, and you probably do as well, I think of it in terms of, okay, let me think about that. What is the locked-in, quote-unquote, vote of each of the two major candidates? And I think it really is in the mid-40s. There's about probably only about 10% of the folks that are up for grabs here. So the question to me is, who and by what measure, by what means, among Landrieu and Cassidy, could start taking significant votes away from the other? And I just don't see that happening, so I think we're headed for a runoff.
The other prospect that would, I'm sure, be a nightmare for Senator Landrieu would be if a prominent Democrat, particularly a minority Democrat, got in the race. Do you see that, any prospect of that happening?
I don't, but you and I both know that kind of thing does tend to happen as more or less a real surprise and more or less close to qualifying. So,
all right, we'll be back in 90 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Frank Barnett producing. Elliot Stonecipher, the longtime pollster, is with us, and we're talking about the election of 2014, and we will cover some other matters, including the election of 2015 and Governor Jindal's quest to become president in the year 2016. But Elliot, last year on this program, I thought he made a cogent observation, and that if Senator Landrieu had been running in 2010 when David Vitter ran for re-election, she quite likely would have lost that at that time. And if Vitter had been running in 2008 when Landrieu won re-election, it's quite likely that David Vitter would have been a goner. So they've both been the beneficiary of timing, which is everything in politics. And it would seem, Elliot, that Mary Landrieu doesn't have the best of timing this time. She's running at a time when the president is not popular nationally and certainly not popular in this state.
Right. And the demography, of course, of those who turn out in these midterm elections is entirely different than those who turn out in a presidential election. It is that presidential turnout, especially among Democratic voters, that Mary Landrieu most needs right now. It skews younger. It skews more to the minority. It skews more to women of all professional categories or employment categories. It is exactly what a Mary Landrieu needs in a supposedly red state. She did have that, obviously, in 2008. She doesn't now. And that's why so much of the analysis of this race is about that issue, the difference in that turnout and profile in the midterm elections. And then also, Jim, about the relatively fewer Democrat voters that there are registered. Those registered as Democrats are down about 250,000 people in Louisiana in comparison to 2000, which was just 4 years into her first term. She has very real obstacles that are buried in those things that we talk about less. It's a tremendous challenge for her.
And if she pulls it off, she will go down as one of the great survivors, not only in Louisiana, but in American politics, because this time she doesn't have the best of hands to play, but she is out there trying. She, of course, could do what others have done and cash in and become a big-time lobbyist, and she still might do that, but she opted to seek a fourth term. Were you at all surprised by that?
I am to some extent, and we won't know until qualifying, but it seems pretty obvious that she's spending an awful lot of money if she's not going to qualify. I think given the very obstacles that I'm talking about, it was at least a 50-50 chance a year ago, let's say, that she would not actually go at it this next time. I think especially after the Affordable Care Act problems, it heightened the awareness of many that, well, maybe she just shouldn't do this. Mm-hmm. So you're making an excellent point. The Landrieus are, of course, Louisiana's political dynasty, and I think they see themselves as different in this context, and I believe she, among the Landrieus particularly, believes that there are an awful lot of people who are Republicans registered or independents who will cross over and vote for her basically because she brings the bacon home. And I think that's what this is a referendum about, as well as, of course, just her reelection.
A question from a listener, and we will go to the phone lines in just a moment, but Michael asks about the ordained Republican candidate, Bill Cassidy. Michael says, would Landrieu have preferred to have run against Bobby Jindal?
Wow, that's an excellent question. I think, no, I don't think she would rather have run against Bobby Jindal. Bobby Jindal has an ability to raise money nationally, probably even more than the ordained, as the caller is saying, Republican candidate. I think no matter what his popularity decline is, he just looks like a much, much more formidable candidate to me. I think she was probably relatively, as these things go, pleased that it is Congressman Cassidy.
297-5633, your number. Charles on North Foster. Good morning, Charles. You're on with Elliot Stonecipher.
Good morning, Jim, and good morning to you guests. I am absolutely flabbergasted that you guys have written off the Democrats and Mary Landrieu. You guys don't seem to focus much on Mr. Cassidy and why he has nothing to say. Let's talk about his just his ethics for a minute. This was a man who voted to cut FEMA, but after our last hurricane, was out registering voters to take advantage of FEMA. What can you say about a guy like that, who closes the World War II Museum in New Orleans, but nobody in the media here in Baton Rouge or Louisiana calls him on the carpet about it?
Wait a minute, Charles. I think the World War II Museum's still open.
Wait, Jim. He closed it when he signed that letter with 80 other Tea Party members to defund it and close the doors. Now, that was a big row among conservatives, but you guys didn't call Bill Cassidy on it. But here's the other thing that's going to get Mary Landrieu elected. Bill Cassidy is nothing but a mouthpiece for the Koch brothers, and we're not going to be a footstool for those guys in Kansas anymore.
I don't know that Elliot and I wrote off Senator Landrieu. We're just saying she's got a tough fight, and I think she would acknowledge that. But yeah. Go ahead, Elliot.
Well, I think Charles has done a great job of showing just how pervasive is the practice of getting people the right talking points. These are the things we're going to hear from the Landrieu side by rote. We're going to hear them from the Cassidy side by rote. And I think that's why 45% or so are locked into each of them, and this is really only about 10%. The 10% probably hear the talking points, mm-hmm. and they just don't pay attention. I think that's the difference.
297-5633 for Elliot Stonecipher. How will this election affect the governor's race next year? In my view, maybe I'm wrong, is that the reason some folks are sitting on the sidelines right now, they're waiting to see how this Senate race plays out because it will determine whether or not, in their view, a Democrat has a legitimate shot of winning. So right now, John Bel Edwards, the only Democrat in the race for governor. And if Landrieu wins re-election, there may be a few other Democrats.
Right. And I think in more ways than we will have time to cover, it does affect next year's race. And I'll just say from the top, if Mary Landrieu wins, then I think Mitch Landrieu being in the governor's race is a much, much stronger likelihood. I don't know that in a in-state gubernatorial turnout pattern or profile that he can be elected, regardless of what happens in the Senate race. But I think we can at least say, without anybody having any trouble understanding where we're coming from, if Mary Landrieu wins this race in a midterm election demographic turnout, it is hard to make the case that a Democrat can't be governor 1 year later. I think it makes all the difference.
All the difference. Not a little bit of difference, all the difference.
I know my analysis would be diametrically different based on whether or not she wins.
It is amazing, Elliot, how a 51-49% victory is viewed as opposed to a 51-49% loss. If Landrieu wins a squeaker, she'll be regarded as a great politician, and I think she is, whether she wins or loses. But if she loses, even if it's close, she'll be regarded as somebody who couldn't retain a seat after three terms and was sent on her way. Perspective is quite interesting.
I think you're right, and I would add this, too. I think Mary Landrieu may well be the last of a whole class of public officials, especially at this level of national politics, that we won't see again. I don't think we come here again. I think candidates in the future will not be able to build their strength on whether or not they were particularly good at so-called bringing the bacon home, as one example. I think the demography of candidates will be dramatically different. I don't care if it's female or minority. I think this is a generation that passes very, very soon in American politics. And I think she's all the more remarkable in that context.
There are now at least two congressional races that could have December runoffs in the 5th District with Vance McAllister and the 6th District with Edwin Edwards and an array of Republicans. That adds a new dimension to this year's election season.
It does, and I think it is notable. I think all along we were all hearing, and by the way, the 4th District could yet see Shreveport Mayor Cedric Glover get in the 4th District race against the incumbent Congressman Fleming. All of those races have been rumored by many to be notable in that the Democrat candidate in those races, now the 5th and the 6th, Mayor Jamie Mayo from Monroe, of course, is the one in the 5th District, and then Edwin Edwards is the one in the 6th District. And I think that does, in fact, help in terms of turnout, minority turnout for Senator Landrieu. I think it matters. I don't think that's an inconsequential thing. If Cedric Glover is in the race in the 4th, it's a little arguable. He's less popular. Maybe he actually works against her in turnout by turning out more of the Fleming vote. But in any case, it's important that those two races are there. I don't think that's negligible.
A question from a listener. Well, I tell you what, let's go to John in Lafayette, who's been waiting patiently, and then we'll get to some more online inquiries with Elliot Stonecipher. John, good morning. You're on with Elliot.
Good morning, y'all. Just getting back on the governor's race for a minute, as to Mitch Landrieu running, I think he should run. I think he can beat David Vitter. There are a lot of Republicans who will not vote for David Vitter, and I think if Mitch is the other candidate, I think he'll get those votes. What do you think?
All right. Mitch against David Vitter, that would be a runoff that would be quite interesting.
Yes, and I think what the conventional wisdom is, I agree with, and that is that David Vitter's weakness has always been, will continue to be, of course, how he does among women. I think that would be the reason that many of us would think that the Mitch Landrieu campaign targeted in that direction is the one that provides the best test for David Vitter. I think the importance of the women's vote is almost back to the level, and Jim, you'll remember this, when we used to poll women, particularly in the context of the ERA, the Equal Rights Amendment. We're back to that point now for a completely different reason and among a completely different kind of women's vote. I think Mitch Landrieu gets that. I think he exploits that, and I think that is the test for David Vitter.
Do you think Senator Vitter will have to answer questions about his past, or is that over and done with?
I think it's over and done with, not because there aren't people who want him to answer for it, but because he's proven that he's never going to. He just doesn't, and he won't.
He probably will be hit with some attacks from his opponents. For example, Jay Darden, nice guy, reasonable fellow, but his political consultant is a go-for-the-jugular kind of guy, George Kennedy. I can't imagine George Kennedy letting something like this go.
I can't either, and yet I will tell you this. Jay Darden's a good example. Anybody who does that against David Vitter, and David Vitter is as tough and rough a campaigner, if not actual elected official, as we've ever known. He hesitates for maybe 5 seconds before he goes for the juggler. Any candidate better have their house in order, because if they come after David Vitter over that line, which we'll just call it personal, then everybody better get ready for they're going to have to empty their closet as well. And that's pretty daunting stuff for anybody.
That would be something, and we may very well see that. Yesterday on this show, Ray Strother told a story about a candidate in Mississippi who won the governor's race there in the early 80s. And Strother said that he had pictures of this man with a male prostitute and that he and the other candidate decided not to use them. Those days are long gone.
They are, and I know that story, and I know others that we know, many of us, and there are horrible old phrases that we used to use about that. But what's interesting is it all added up to a rule gone by. The rule was do not cross over those lines into that kind of personal behavior and or especially family members' behavior. But I will tell you this, and I hope Raymond said this, I mean, that was a close call. It almost got used, and I don't think it would have worked.
You don't think it would have worked?
I do not. I think then the backlash would have just been extraordinary.
But today, with the 24-hour media cycle and the internet, something like that, those pictures would be everywhere if it were today.
Absolutely. To the point that I don't know that it matters that much anymore.
Well, But next year has the prospect of being a race in which children may not want to be be watching right. and listening, even to shows like this. 297-5633 for Elliott Stone Cipher. Bobby Jindal running for president, 2016. No doubt about it, he's in the race. What do you think? Is this a Don Quixote type maneuver by the governor, or does he have a real shot?
I think his only shot, and it's not a good one, is to be the vice presidential nominee for someone else heading up the ticket. I don't think he's ever proven that he can even scratch in national polling as a candidate really, really having a chance to be the Republican nominee. So I think, as we've learned in these years of Bobby Jindal as governor, he has a reason, he has a plan. It's going to accrue to his benefit, no matter whether he looks to us like he wins or loses. So there's a reason for doing it. I just don't think there's much of a chance that he gets past being governor. Maybe he'll want to run for the Senate someday. I just don't think we expect him back in Louisiana too much after his second term as governor is over.
Sunday in the Advocate, Marcia Shuler, who remains one of the best reporters in America, she wrote a story about the Medicaid contract that has resulted in grand jury proceedings, saying an anonymous whistleblower warned federal officials about problems dangerously close to fraud in connection with the state award of a lucrative, now scrapped, state Medicaid claims processing contract. That, according to recently released documents that the Jindal administration used in making its decision to cancel the contract. The email shows that federal regulators alerted state officials of the potential issues with the $200 million contract prior to its award to a company that had employed the state's health agency chief. As Secretary of the State Department of Health, Bruce Greenstein was in charge of the agency that oversaw the contract. Greenstein repeatedly said he was not involved in the decision to award the contract to his former employer Client Network Services, but phone records and other data included in the released documents show at least 2,882 contacts between Greenstein and CNSI executives and the company's lobbyists. Now, Elliot, we'll talk more about this after the break, but if this were Edwin Edwards, I have a feeling that former Governor Edwards might be facing indictment.
Absolutely. And I got to tell you, I agree with what you said about Marcia. And as recently as last night, I was on the phone talking to a frontline player in all of these hospital debates around the state, talking about Marcia's article. It is a big deal. It was an outstanding report, and I agree. Were it Edwin Edwards, we would be talking federal grand jury impending indictment.
297-5633, your number. Elliott Stonecipher with us for a few more moments. We'll hear from Jenny Ballard, the new artistic director of Theater Baton Rouge. Inkster Show at WRKF Online. Back with Elliott Stonecipher after this 90-second pause on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Elliott Stonecipher, the pollster and demographer in Shreveport, is with us. And let's go to Bob and Walker. Bob, good morning. You're on the air with Elliot.
Yes, Jim. Appreciate you taking my call. I want to see if you have any information on this new lady that I'm not familiar with, Lenore Whitney, running for Congress. Can you tell me anything about her, and I'll listen to your comment on the radio.
All right. I'm sure Elliot is aware of Representative Whitney. She is a latecomer to this race, but there is a galaxy of Republicans in the race in the 6th District, and Whitney is very close to the governor. Is she the governor's candidate in this race, Elliot?
Excellent question, and I don't profess to know exactly. I'm intrigued, to say the very least, about that candidacy, and frankly, a couple of the other ones in the race. I can't say that I've done all the homework I'm going to, but that is the way it was communicated to me when I first heard the name. That's about all I can offer.
Well, that race, Edwin Edwards is really going to have to mess things up not to make a runoff.
Yes.
And if he gets in a runoff with any of the Republicans, which he probably will, the advantage swings the other direction.
It does, and by a large margin. I think when you think of what a poll will show, we're presuming that he is the Democrat that makes the runoff, and then some one of the Republicans, probably by a very small margin and not a very high percentage of the vote. What would the poll look like, you know, the week after November the 4th? And I think at that point, Edwin Edwards is probably well behind double digits, and that the whole point of keeping up with it until December the 6th will be to see if there's any chance that he can close as big a gap as we all expect him to have.
Another question from a listener. What about Common Core? Is this an issue that's resonating with the people of the state?
You know, I think the people of the state, it's fascinating politically. I know people know that, but I'm looking forward, for example, to the meeting that will be held tomorrow. I think it's very, very interesting for all of us to stop and look at how the governor did this 180. There's some great reporting, by the way, on NOLA.com today about this as well. I mean, we know that he was the Common Core guy, and his staff people were as recently as 2 years ago. To see this reversal in that period of time and think through how Bobby Jindal does his political business is fascinating. As to the substance of the debate, it is all parties engaged on both sides. It's going to leave a lot of people very unhappy no matter which way this goes. But to me, the story is Bobby Jindal's politics and executive overreach on his part, which he constantly, of course, berates President Obama for.
Veronica in Denham Springs. Veronica, you're on the air with Elliot Stone Cipher.
Hi. It appears that the Jindal doctrine is you're with me or you're against me. He doesn't seem to take dissent, which is a recipe for failure. And his abandonment of John White, whether you agree with his politics or not, was appalling. Thanks.
I agree completely. I think Veronica has said it very well, and I think the people of Louisiana have now really sorted through, and they know this. And I would add this. A lot of what I hear is everything that Veronica said, plus he does his fighting, which is unfair to many in most cases, through others. He doesn't stand, do his fighting one-on-one where you can hear his reasons. And I think that makes it even more damaging to him politically, at least in-state.
He still has year and a half to go as governor, but what do you think his legacy will be?
I cannot imagine that it is positive. I think his legacy is that he kept the string alive, and I keep up with this. I think you do, Jim. There has never been a governor in Louisiana who served two consecutive terms that any of us would agree after the fact was a reform governor. I don't think any governor we've ever elected was more suited for, headed for, or more promised to reform Louisiana and did so little. I think that's his legacy.
Well, you at one time, I know, were glowing in your praise of him, but what changed? What was
Well, I was fortunate among Louisianans who want to know the truth. All of us were that way, I think, with the exception of the people who ran against him, of course, in 2007. I think we were carried away by the promise that he had always shown and the post-Katrina, post-Rita world that Louisiana was in that we thought gave us a shot at real reform. He looked perfect. I was fortunate in that before he was even inaugurated, I was working with the old state ethics board pro bono, and I saw that the ethics reform thing was anything but reform. I had trouble accepting that what he was saying was so patently untrue as to what we were really going to get out of ethics reform. He has consistently not done what he said. I was just one of the ones who saw it very early. And I don't think anybody could have been more supportive of him based on the promise than I had been until then in late 2007.
Elliot Stone Cipher, we will wrap it up with you in just a moment, but I talked to somebody close to the governor the other day, and they indicated that Bobby Jindal was bruised far more than has been told by the loss to Kathleen Blanco in 2003, and he felt like his ethnicity cost him the election. And that made him tougher, and it may have made him a bit meaner. he's been a different kind of governor, I think most people, even his most ardent supporters, would say, than advertised.
Yes. I think that's absolutely true, and I believe that the point you're making makes good sense. We have all heard, those of us who stay perhaps too close to these subjects, that there is something like that. I think that's probably it. He has acted, he has governed as if he is bitter toward the very people of Louisiana he swore an oath to serve. When that happens, there is some story exactly like the one you just shared that's at the heart of it.
Chuck and Scott, please be brief. You're on with Elliot.
Yes. I'm wondering if any governor has done to education, particularly higher education, more harm than Bobby Jindal, and is there any hope with the next crop of governor candidates?
All right. What about higher education?
I think he has been as damaging as any, and I think there will be a difference regardless of who the next governor is. I think the point, though, is the next governor may make us look at the fact that we cannot support the number of colleges and universities that we have.
Well, Elliot, always a pleasure. Take care, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you very much, Jim.
See you soon. We're joined in studio by Jenny Ballard, the beautiful artistic managing director of the Theater Baton Rouge, formerly the Baton Rouge Little Theater. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Jim. I'm really happy to be here.
Well, good to hear you and see you. And you are no stranger to this community.
I'm not. I've actually been living here for about 4 years now. August marks my four-year anniversary. And I came down here to get my MFA from LSU and graduated in 2013 and have been working with the theater and arts community ever since. And it's been really wonderful. Mm-hmm. I love it here.
And according to the press release that was sent out not so long ago, Ballard begins her new role July 15th. Well, today is July. Is this your first as the managing artistic director?
I'm kicking it off with you. Pretty awesome.
And you take the place of Keith Dixon,
who was absolutely
for a long time.
Wonderful.
Long time.
Yeah, he was there for 10 years and did really incredible work with the theater. So I have big shoes to fill.
All right. Well, Theater Baton Rouge has a new name, but a rose by any other name is still a rose.
And, absolutely.
And you have quite a heritage and tradition.
Yes, we do. We have so many wonderful volunteers working for us. And, of course, this is our 69th season coming up. So we have been around for quite a long time. And without the volunteers and the wonderful staff that we have, the theater wouldn't have been in existence for this long. We're really excited about our upcoming season and working with many of the volunteers that we worked with over the years and bringing in some new people as well. Of course, we're very excited about Mary Poppins, which is coming up this coming fall. It kicks off our main stage season, which is our Capital series. And just based on the success that we had with Annie, which recently closed, I expect that Mary Poppins will be equally successful, and I advise people to get their tickets now.
You directed Annie, didn't you?
I did direct Annie. I did, and it was such a great experience.
So when does Mary Poppins...
Mary Poppins actually opens September 12th, so we've still got a little while until that opens. Between now and then, we have the opening of our Turner Fisher City series, which is in the studio next door to the main stage, and we're doing The Shape of Things, which kicks off that season. So we're very excited about that. That opens August 1st.
The Shape of Things, August 1st, and Mary Poppins on September 12th.
That's right.
You've got a busy start. August 1st is obviously just a few weeks away.
It's just around the corner. We're doing a fundraiser right now. We're doing a Tony and Tina's wedding, and that's happening at Green Oaks Funeral Home. So
a fundraiser at a funeral home?
Yes, I know. And we're calling it a quote-unquote fundraiser, so we're putting the fun back in funeral.
Well, whatever gets you through the night. And there have been a lot of nights at the Baton Rouge Little Theater, now Theater Baton Rouge, and Jenny Ballard has a list of credits that is quite impressive in your young life. You also directed Godspell, didn't you?
I did. I directed Godspell for Swine Palace and Playmakers of Baton Rouge back in 2011. And then the following summer, I directed How Can You Run with a Shell on Your Back? Mm-hmm. So I have quite a bit of experience in this community, and I'm looking forward to directing several of the shows coming up. I'm directing Spring Awakening, which follows Mary Poppins, and then Company in the Spring. So lots of exciting stuff for Theater Baton Rouge.
You have a background in Tennessee, right?
I do. I'm from Knoxville, Tennessee, actually. I went to the University of Tennessee years and years ago and lived in Tennessee for many years. And I actually ran a children's theater company called Knoxville Children's Theater for about 3 years. I started and ran that before I came down here, and worked for many area theater companies while I was living in Tennessee. And so I'm really glad to be returning to kind of my roots of theater, working with volunteers, which is really, really what I love.
What was the catalyst to come to Baton Rouge?
I actually came to Baton Rouge to go to graduate school at LSU. That was the reason that I moved down here. I felt like I really wanted to further myself as an artist, and I felt like as wonderful as the work that I was getting to do in Tennessee was, I needed to really challenge myself by starting somewhere new, and so Louisiana has proved to be the perfect place for that. But like I said, I'm really excited about getting back into the artistic and administrative side of theater, because it's really what I love.
How is the talent pool in this community?
Oh, it's unbelievable. It is unbelievable. Baton Rouge is full of first-rate talent. As far as singers and dancers and actors go, you really can't beat it. You know, it's been really exciting. I just feel like I'm constantly being exposed to really, really talented people, both existing talent and new talent. A lot of people, I think, are nervous to get involved with theater companies if they haven't done it before, because it can be intimidating if you're coming into a well-established company with lots of great people. But I encourage people to come out and audition. Call our box office, visit our website, find out about volunteer opportunities. Because if being on stage is not the thing for you, then there are plenty of opportunities backstage as well. If you're interested in costumes or lights or sound or sets, any of that is available on a volunteer basis, if that's something that's interesting.
These, Jenny, have been curious times for nonprofits and fundraising or fundraising, there's some challenges, aren't there?
There are some challenges. I think that on a national level, the arts are really suffering right now. And I think that, unfortunately, a lot of the onus falls on the nonprofit theater companies because arts just aren't available in the schools in the same way that they used to be. So it's really important to me to try to figure out how to further the arts in this community. And for me personally, an important part of that is developing the education program that's part of Theater Baton Rouge a little bit more fully. It's already such a wonderful resource to this community, especially to the youth of the greater Baton Rouge area. And Jack Lampert, the education director, has done wonderful work for years. But there are a lot of doors that have yet to be open just because of, you know, access. And I think that the education program right now is in the place of all possibilities, which is a really, really great place to be. So I'm looking forward to seeing what doors we can open. I'm looking forward to working with Jack to grow it even more and see how we can bring the arts to communities and to schools that maybe don't have access otherwise. Outreach is really important to Theater Baton Rouge. So one of the tasks for me is going to be to figure out how to further this theater company in the community and get it into some places that it hasn't necessarily gone into before. And of course, fundraising is going to be a big challenge, but I'm excited about working with new partners and talking about new opportunities, and I think there are lots of exciting possibilities ahead.
All right. Now, the venue is beautiful, but the area of town has seen better days. And a question from a listener is about safety. I don't think there's any problem if you go to an event at Theater Baton Rouge, but there may be some concerns about that.
Fair enough. It is actually a very safe area. We've never had any problems. People can feel very safe about coming to the theater, parking their cars, and leaving them. There's no problem at all. We also have very good staff around at all times to make sure that children are not walking alone, unattended, that they're always with their parents. Having said that, it is very safe, and I encourage people not to feel like it's an unsafe part of town. We are doing everything we can to make sure that safety is the first priority, and we will continue to do that.
Well, you've been at the location, which, of course, is the old Bon Marché, for how long?
Gosh, we've been there for quite a while now. It's been really exciting. And we have some work that we're doing right now to renovate the building a little bit and maintain it. Of course, we've been there long enough to where there are repairs that need to be made. And so right now we're focusing on making those and making sure that the building is in the best possible shape that it can be. It's already a wonderful place, and now we're just going to make it even better.
Well, and you're off to a superb start. Mary Poppins on September 12th.
Yes.
And August 1st.
Is The Shape of Things.
And who, do you have a cast?
We actually do have a cast. Stephanie Toops is playing Evelyn, the lead. And in Mary Poppins, we have lots of really, really wonderful people. Melanie Cuvion is playing Mary Poppins, so we're very excited about that because she's returning to Theater Baton Rouge after many, many years of being away. And we also have Lynn Holdridge directing Mary Poppins, and he's someone who has worked for Disney for over 20 years. So he's great.
Well, let's talk frequently, and congratulations. First day on the job for Jenny Bauer.
Thanks, Jim.
And thanks for listening, and stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.